Station for Tix 12. Maharaj Parikshit. While the cowherd boys, who knew nothing within the core of their hearts but Krishna, were thus engaged in eating their lunch in the forest, the calves went far away, deep into the forest, being allured by green grass. And now text 13. Tandrishvabhaya santrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitragni Asan Mavira Mate. Hanesye Vatsakanaham. Tandrishva Baya Samrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitrapi Asanma Viratmate. Hanesye Vatsakanaham. Tandrishva Baya Samtrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitrapi Asan Maviramate. Hanesye Vatsakanaham. Please chant. Tandrishva Baya Santrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitrapi Asan Mambira Mate. Hanesye Vatsakanaham. Sandrishva Baya Santrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitrapi Asan Vavira Mate. Hanesye Vatsakanaham. Tandrishva Baya Santrashtan. Ache Krishna Syabhi Bayam. Mitrapi Asan Mavira Mate. Hanesye Vatrakanaham. Word for word. Tan. That those calves were going away. Drishtva. Seeing. Baya. Seeing. Oh, did I do it wrong? Sorry. I see. Bayas sanyastanto, to the cowherd boys who were disturbed by fear, that with the dense forest, the calves would be attacked by some ferocious animals. Ache, Krishna said, Krishna Asya Bibayam. Krishna, who is himself the fearful element of all kinds of fear. When Krishna is present, there is no fear. Mitrani, my dear friends. Asat, from your enjoyment of eating. Mavira Mata, do not stop. Iha, in this place, in this spot. Anisye shall bring back Batsakan, the calves. I. And the translation for text 13. When Krishna saw that his friends, the cowherd boys, were frightened, he, the fierce controller even of fear itself, said, just to mitigate that fear, my dear friends, do not stop eating. I shall bring your calves back to this spot by personally going after them myself. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. In the presence of Krishna's friendship, a devotee cannot have any fear. Krishna is the supreme controller, the controller of even death, which is supposed to be the ultimate fear in the material world. it's a little bit small for me today. It's Bhagavatam 11.2.17. This fear arises because of lack of Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there cannot be any fear. For one who has taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, this material world of fear becomes hardly dangerous at all. I'm not going to attempt to read it because my sight is not so good today. Bhavam Budhu, the material ocean of fear becomes very easy to cross by the mercy of the Supreme Controller. This material world, in which there is fear and danger at every step, padam padam, yat vipadam, is not meant for those who have taken shelter at Krishna's lotus feet. Such persons are delivered from this fearful world. Samashrataye pada padlava plavam mahat padam punyo vasho murarehe bhavam padir vatsa padam param padam 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 yat vipadam natesham. Bhagavatam 10.14.58. Everyone therefore should take shelter of the Supreme Person, who is the source of fearlessness, and thus be secure. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Manopistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadam Mayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakam Kamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishaka Vitamscha. Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bando Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapsa Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavanishvari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatribhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnebhyo Namo Namaham. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Ram Padaswami Tinamine. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tinamine. Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Garadhar Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Okay. I'll read the translation once again. When Krishna saw that his friends, the cowherd boys, were frightened, he, the fierce controller, even of fear itself, said, just to mitigate their fear, my dear friends, do not stop eating. I shall bring your calves back to the spot by personally going after them myself. So, not seeing the calves, you went to look for them, referring to Krishna, to allay the fears of the cowherd boys. But then you lost sight of the boys, meaning Krishna had as well, and began looking for both the calves and the boys. This is the encapsulated summary of these two verses that is from Krishna Leela Stava of Srila Sanatan Goswami. And Krishna had been in the process of having, and these are Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's words, his picnic of simplicity. That's the exact phrase used by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So the Lord was enjoying in the company of Lord Baladev and the other cowherd boys, and sometimes, and this is a little different from what we've just been hearing narrated by Srila Sukadev Goswami, but it's a general description that's given of this particular activity of enjoying his picnic of simplicity. Comes from Light Bhagavata. So I'm going to read this general statement of this activity of Lord Krishna. While sitting, they ate simple food like rice, dal, vegetables, bread, and curd, which they had brought from their homes and which they shared in friendly exchanges. Lord Krishna, being complete himself, does not require any food, but he mercifully eats the food offered by his devotees. So there's very sincere affection on the part of Lord Krishna. The reason that Krishna engages in this picnic of simplicity as such is that he's deriving great transcendental pleasure by accepting services from his various grades of devotees. So he's accepting the service not merely of those cowherd boys that are seated in front of him, but also the preparers of the foodstuffs that they're taking. And he responds to seeing at this particular moment in time, in this picnic of simplicity, suddenly that the cowherd boys have become frightened. And they've become frightened about the fact that they're losing their calves. At least the sight of their calves, because to date they'd been able to see them. So suddenly those calves were no longer visible. And they appear to have gone, and here it's said, far away, deep into the forest, being allured by green grass. And again, there's a very general description of something of this scenario of cows and calves and their grazing, and what usually takes place in Vrajabhumi. So here it is. It's another statement from Light Bhagavata. So generally what goes on, and just to get some sense of the atmosphere. So I'm quoting, after good rains, the grazing ground for the animals was full of green pastures, and both the bulls and the cows sat down on the grass, fully satisfied. The cows, followed by their calves, appear tired of grazing because of full milk bags. Calmly and quietly, the cows and calves rested and ruminated, chewing their cud. So this is the general description. And in this particular case, the calves have been entrusted to these young cowherd boys, and they've suddenly lost sight of them. Now, if one considers Krishna and his particular position, he is considered to be the well-wisher of the calves and the brahmanas, which indicates that there's something that one can draw from this. There's a necessity in human society to cultivate the human spirit, and generally this is done by intelligent persons who in fact are very much aware of the importance of the cows, because they're utilizing that milk, and Srila Prabhupada uses this term, nourishing the finer tissues of the brain through that milk. So those are the very persons that are helping to cultivate the human spirit in society, and they're also putting an emphasis on protecting the cows. Because it's not possible to have the intelligence to be able to cultivate the human spirit in society at large unless one is actually taking milk from cows. This is Srila Prabhupada. It actually requires, that intelligence is nourished by the milk coming from cows. So this is an interesting point. In order to get the highest benefit for human society, just through having a class of persons that are utilizing milk and pursuing protection of cows, then the emphasis that Krishna is putting on cow protection is carried through to its proper conclusion. So generally it's the brahmanas in society that are caring for the truth, who are the ones who are taking this role. And so this category of persons, the brahmanas, they're actually, their search for truth or their care for the truth is synonymous with their caring for knowledge of the absolute truth. And there's a nice verse in Bhagavad Gita 18:43, which lists some of the qualities of these persons. So just bearing in mind the great importance that milk plays in bringing about this, the qualities that manifest as a result of pursuing knowledge of the absolute truth. So here are some of those qualities: peacefulness, self-control, austerity, purity, tolerance, honesty, knowledge, wisdom, and religiousness. These are the natural qualities by which the brahmanas work. So having that important underpinning of the kind of physiological nourishment that's been that's so important to allow for both the pursuit of knowledge about the Supreme Lord and these qualities that start manifesting. And that nice verse is Samodama Tapa Socham Shantir Arjavam Evacha Gyanam Vigyanam Asatiyam Brahma Karma Svabhava Yam. So Krishna, he's taking time out to protect the brahmanas. And we know this, Namo Brahmana Devaya, Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Jagat Hitaya Krishna, Govindaya Namo Namaha. Or as Srila Prabhupada puts it, his first business is to give protection to the brahmanas. So it's his priority. Krishna's priority is to give protection to the brahmanas and the cows, that Go Brahmana Hitaya Cha, Gatitai Krishna. So next, after giving protection to the brahmanas, his next priority is the welfare of everybody else. And for Krishna, everybody else begins with the cows, which is interesting. So that's the priority: Brahmanas, cows, and then everybody else. So he specifically protects cows, and he also gives instructions for one to do so. All going back to this importance of cultivating the human spirit. So to see what the opposite is when there's death of the human spirit, Lord Rishabhdev, from the fifth canto and the fifth chapter, the fourth verse, these are his words. He's instructing his son. So this epitomizes the death of the human spirit. When a person considers sense gratification the aim of life, he certainly becomes mad after materialistic living and engages in all kinds of sinful activity. He does not know that due to his past misdeeds, he's already received a body, which, although temporary, is the cause of his misery. Actually, the living entity should not have taken on a material body, but he has been awarded the material body for sense gratification. So Lord Rishabhdev paints this picture, what it looks like when the human spirit is dead. So, you know, one's factually mad after acquiring sensorial pleasures, and connected to those sensorial pleasures is the crossing of so many moral, ethical, never mind transcendental, scriptural injunctions. It goes along with it. So that's the death of the human spirit. So Lord Rishabhdev says, therefore, I think it is not befitting an intelligent man to involve himself again in the activities of sense gratification by which he perpetually gets material bodies one after another. So, you know, he summarizes in speaking to his sons. And Lord Rishabhdev, he also explains what it means to cultivate the human spirit. So he's talking to his sons again. So he has the opposite. My dear boys, of all the living entities who have accepted material bodies in this world, one who has been awarded this human form should not work hard day and night simply for sense gratification, which is available even for dogs and hogs that eat stool. One should engage in penance and austerity to attain the divine position of devotional service. By such activity, one's heart is purified, and when one attains this position, he attains eternal blissful life, which is transcendental to material happiness and which continues forever. So it's a huge mouthful, but it completely captures what it means to cultivate the human spirit. It means that factually, one is working like the Brahmanas are, practicing austerities and penances, so one's coming to that position of devotional service. And it means that one's life is eternal because one's existing on a spiritual plane, so there's no end to it. And it's completely separate to the kind of happiness which Lord Rishabhdev described was the kind of happiness that was creating madness and causing one to fall into a very sinful activity, that pursuit of sensorial kinds of pleasures. So the Brahmanas are persons who are relieving the whole of society from enslavement to different bodies. I mean, that is the broader picture. So it's not merely the one body, but an enslavement to numerous bodies that they're destined to have to take on by taking bhakti yoga to those persons. because that's Lord Rishabh Dev's emphasis of cultivating the human spirit, is allowing persons to understand the necessity of austerity and penance so that they can start to come to the position of devotional service or bhakti yoga. And they may rise to this elevated state of bhakti yoga or Krishna consciousness, meaning that their whole aim in life becomes more sublime. So it's absolutely essential that the brahmanas, with their extraordinary qualities of peacefulness and tolerance and their happiness in taking up austerities and penances, are cultivating the human spirits, and for them the whole underpinning is the necessity of milk from cows. So this is very interesting. It's very contrary to the negative light in which milk is often viewed. I recall quite some years ago when I lived in New York City, it was a common belief that milk was the bane of human society because of mucus-forming properties. So naturally, if one considers the depth of the implication of taking milk, and how it's so interconnected with the upliftment of the entire society and the freedom from enslavement to material bodies, you know, it seems almost ludicrous to hear such a statement. Of course, you know, a mere addition of some cardamom destroys the mucus-forming properties if one really wants to look at that argument. But yeah. So now, going back to the cowherd boys, the gopas, they forgot all about the calves as they happily took prasad with Krishna. It appeared as if the gopas, and this is, I'm reading a little description just to give something of that, an expanded view of how they're appeared just prior to this moment where they've lost sight of their calves and the great fear they start experiencing. And this is from, I think, Sri Krishna Leela Stava. No. It's Srila Kavi Karnapura. The gopis forgot all about the calves. The gopis forgot all about the calves as they happily took prasad with Krishna. It appeared as if the gopas' lips bathed in the radiance of their teeth as they joked and laughed. During that time, Brahma stealthily stole their calves. After some time, when the cowherd boys looked for the calves, they could not find them. Feeling sad and helpless, they appealed to Krishna, who is greater than Lord Shiva. Oh, beloved friend, we cannot find any of our calves. It seems they have wandered far away, being greedy to eat fresh grass. Let us enter the forest and search for them. While listening, Krishna's face looked more charming than a splendid full moon. Smiling compassionately, Krishna spoke to mitigate their fear. My dear friends, do not stop eating, just stay here. I shall personally find the calves and bring them to you. Krishna put down his food and went to search for the calves. So there's such a blissful exchange. I mean, just hearing of the radiance of the boys and Krishna's radiance, such very ecstatic transcendental exchange. And then comes this sadness and helplessness that the cowherd boys start experiencing because they actually can't find their calves. And Srila Kavi Karnapura, he mentions in one sentence that actually what had transpired during that time was that Brahma, Lord Brahma, had stealthily stolen the calves. So we're going to come to that in later verses. Now here, Krishna, who gives, and this is the description, fear to fear personified, and that was in this verse that we read, the Asya Bibuyam, he's giving fear to fear personified. He speaks very affectionately to the cowherd boys. We hear this, he's feeling compassion because he sees how helpless they feel. I shall go and personally bring your calves back to the spot. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he is describing something of, I'd been highlighting the great necessity for, you know, society as a large to come to this point of devotional service. And Srila Jiva Goswami, he examines what it means actually taking up sadhana bhakti. And I'm particularly looking at what he has to say because, you know, I was contrasting Lord Rishabhdev describing the mad kind of existence of life with the a life that's actually going to put an end to this taking on of material bodies. So Srila Jiva Goswami says that sadhana bhakti, without relying on any intermediate process, so there's nothing else that's required, it directly counteracts material miseries. So this is the case because doing devotional service or practicing sadhana, bhakti, means that one is learning it from scriptures and from saintly persons. And the motivation for sadhana bhakti, it rests on the scriptural injunctions. So there's a learning process that's involved, and as one's actually hearing from saintly persons, studying scriptures, then this performance of regulated bhakti, because everything's regulated, there's a right time for doing something, there's the correct activities for doing something, the manner in which one has done, the activities are done, the consciousness with which one is performing those activities, allows for the heart to gradually get purified, meaning that it's going to get free from all that madness that's there, that all those desires, those aspirations that are connected to the mad way of existing, you know, looking for sensorial pleasure. So one's heart is getting freed from that. And that whole process actually leads to one being able to perform the service, the bhakti yoga, in a very spontaneous kind of way. And just hearing this, how these cowherd boys are functioning, gives a picture of something of what that spontaneous service looks like. And one of the verses said it, that all that's known in the heart is Krishna. So all this other stuff has got cleared away, all that madness that's connected to trying to find some sort of pleasure for the subtle or the gross body. So Srila Jiva Goswami says then that in this sense, you could say that sadhana bhakti, it matures into this state of prema bhakti, which is, you know, what we're reading with these cowherd boys. They complete in a state of complete love and affection for Lord Krishna. But prema bhakti itself, it's actually the internal potency of Lord Krishna. And It shows itself in his aspiring devotees only by his grace and the grace of his pure devotees. So he allows for that to be there. Devotion which is distinguished by the activities of the senses and which matures into bhava bhakti is called sadhana bhakti. So this appearance of eternally existing, an eternally existing sentiment of devotion or bhava in the heart is called the fruition of devotion. So it's an ongoing, continuous process. It just means that as everything is getting cleared out of the heart, all those desires, aspiration, that are connected to looking for sensorial pleasure, is getting pushed out of the way, and instead affection for Krishna is growing and deepening. So these different stages are really actually just the deepening of that affection and attachment to Lord Krishna. This is still Srila Jiva Goswami. When bhava bhakti intensifies, it's called prema bhakti. The only difference between the two is the degree of intensity. And when bhava becomes very dense and the devotee's heart melts completely out of intense love and great attachment to the Lord, learned scholars call that state prema. So the heart's completely melted. It's very interesting. So, because devotion belongs to the internal potency of the Lord, it's so potent, just as Lord Krishna is, and it can fulfill all a devotee's desires. So it's not that now one's, you know, going to be in this barren field and there's no happiness and there's not going to be any satisfaction because, you know, one has pushed aside all those things that gave one pleasure or gave pleasure to the senses that were the sort of material way of achieving that kind of pleasure. No, rather it's that actually all one's desires get fulfilled. So because it's the internal potency of the Lord. And Srila Prabhupada explains that sadhana bhakti, unaided by any other process, directly removes all worldly miseries such as mental and physical disturbances. So just taking up sadhana bhakti is bringing that about. The kind of disturbances that come with the way the world is designed, that, you know, one will go for a little period of time feeling very content that everything's in order, and then something terrible comes that, you know, destroys it, because that's how the world's designed. There's the happiness and the distress, they go together. So actually sadhana bhakti puts one in a position that one doesn't experience as much disturbance. I mean, one may feel slightly disturbed, but it's not the huge disturbance without being in that position of practicing bhakti. So that's why Srila Prabhupada can say it removes all worldly miseries. One isn't actually touched by them. So here's from Bhagavad Gita 2:36, that description. One who is not disturbed in mind, even admits the threefold miseries or elated when there is happiness, and who is free from attachment, fear, and anger, is called a sage of steady mind. So interesting. The mind is getting steady. So with that attachment, the performance of sadhana bhakti, the mind is steadying. So with a steady mind, it's not that one is getting pulled into this emotion or the opposite emotion or back to the first emotion, back to the opposite emotion, nothing like that. The mind is actually getting very steady. And There's also a change in the outlook, in that a person comes to the conclusion that Lord Krishna is everything. And this takes a bit of time, because one has to go through that process of clearing out all those sensorial, be it on a gross or subtle level, desires that are looking for that happiness on the material plane. Once actually losing fear and losing anger, and the mind is getting steady, and one is actually coming to that point where one's actually thinking, no, Krishna is everything. That's actually where all my happiness is going to lie. And so then one can accept any of these miseries that are coming, because one is within the material world and one is functioning at the present time within a material body. But one is viewing it as, oh, this difficulty is coming, and actually it's something very merciful on the part of the Lord, because it actually could have been magnified so many times over. Because one sees that one is actually internally able to be fairly peaceful, because one's mind is steadying as a result of sadhana bhakti. So one can understand that it's still external to one, that disturbance. And this allows one to be very active and quite daring in terms of one's service to Lord Krishna. Because one isn't getting influenced by the attachments that are making one view something as either very disturbing or very elating. So one's breaking those material attachments that are there, or those ideas that this is the means by which I'm going to get some happiness. One's breaking those ideas, one's changing and transforming those ideas. So this is why Srila Prabhupada can say that the material miseries are actually decreasing. They're getting taken away by practicing sadhana bhakti. And the conclusion is that sadhana bhakti, it directly halts all these miseries that are coming. Directly it's halting them. So it's very much interconnected with the mind steadying itself. So one is, because the mind is that part of the subtle body, or the most elevated sense that is processing with thinking, oh, I like this, I don't like this, I'm distressed, I'm happy. But with the steadying of the mind through sadhana bhakti, then actually one's getting freed from the views of the mind. One isn't subject to those views of, because I really like this, then I'm happy when I have it, or I'm really unhappy when I don't have it. So becoming freed from this kind of attachment that goes along with all the ideas that one is holding, it's also breaking that anger, you know, which comes with losing things or not having what one believes one needs to have, or the fear of losing, or the fear that one won't be able to get what one believes one needs. All of that is getting replaced by the absorption that comes for performing something for Krishna and entering into that internal potency. So it means that one is actually finding refuge in the internal potency of Lord Krishna. There's a sense of, oh, this is where one is peaceful. This is where, you know, it's like being out of the storm. This is where one can be happy and it's always there. That happiness doesn't go away, it remains. So, and Krishna puts it this way. He says that being freed from attachment and fear and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. That's from Bhagavad Gita 4.10. So those were some short thoughts on this verse connected to the cowherd boys losing sight of their calves. If there's any thought on the matter. Yes, Keshav Kishore.
Hare Krishna, Mataji. Thank you for the class.
Thank you.
Mataji, nowadays the trend is to be self-sufficient and green and all these things, but without substance, really in a nanodyne way. Srila Prabhupada, 53 years ago, had his vision as we have to be self-sufficient, trying to kind of like replicate what Braja's life was in a way. No, and I see that would be like a holistic way of being integrated with Mother Nature, with Mother Bhumi, to understand much more who Krishna was and all these beautiful things that you mentioned today about this relationship with the cows and the cow herds. But I see that there's some inconsistency in our community, that we're still buy milk in the convenience store in the corner, and we still buy things that we could have been done. I was thinking that we are not among the vast majority of temples and preaching centers. There's no cow protection. There's no self-sufficiency. I don't know what is going on. We're thinking $40 million to spend in a lavish temple, or $50,000 and putting gold and an altar and things like that, but we're not seeing the real vision of what Prabhupada wants in that case. We say, oh, we cannot eat those karmic lentils because they're green or something, but nothing more karmic than the dairy product. What is going on?
Thank you, Keshav Kishore. You've given a picture of how you're seeing that our society may not possibly be attending to, I guess, this emphasis that Lord Krishna is putting on, you know, protection of cows, because you've seen that, you know, we're still subsisting on milk that's the result of factory farming. Well, it's an interesting thought how one brings about revolutionary change in consciousness and a revolution in lifestyle, and an entire shift in perspective. It wouldn't be accurate to say that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness is not attending to cow protection, because there certainly are farm communities, and I mean, if one visits Geetanagri farm, one sees that indeed there's cows that are being protected. And I can say this very emphatically because many years ago, a devotee liked doing animal husbandry. So she had a farm in Vermont. So she had, you know, one or two bulls, one or two goats, one or two sheep, you know. And I recall staying for a couple of days and going to the perimeter fence that had the cows and bulls of the neighboring farmer. And I walked very peacefully over to those cows and bulls at the fence, and the entire lot started running. And I thought, what kind of atmosphere are they living in where there must be slaughter going on, that when they see a human being, they actually start running? And if you're standing at Geetanagri by the fence, the cows will come over very peacefully. One can actually feed them with grass, not in a factory farm. Those animals start running when they see a human. So one can say that there are projects such as the Geetanagri project where there is cow protection going on, and that is one example that's there of the non-factory farming. And over the years, I mean, I first went to Geetanagri many, many, many years ago, and it looked quite different to what it looks like now. The two devotees that take care of it have drawn on the resources of the other a neighboring community that does practice simple living, the Amish. And so they've learned cheese making techniques from them, and I guess various things that allow for greater comfort of the cows and calves. So when you see the creatures there, they certainly are protected. The fact that those kinds of projects in ISKCON aren't supplying the necessary milk for those persons that are living within the urban setting, yes, there's a factor of distance. I mean, in our present day, you know, one can get everything by mail. I mean, it may be in Turkey, and in a week and a half, one has whatever the object is in one's post box. So in the same way, one could have the milk delivered. The problem with milk is that it's a perishable substance. So in fact, one can get the milk, but shipping costs are quite high. So the way the society is structured is that the urban areas are huge, and then the outlying areas are the rural areas. So there's a long distance to be covered between the rural area and the urban area. So to actually have a farm that is supplying milk with those that are practicing devotion to Krishna and putting an emphasis on cow protection, it requires some devotees that have that particular farming ability. And in our community, we do have such a person. And even then, there isn't understanding on the part of the community of the necessity to support such a person who's actually farming, who's actually, you know, growing vegetables, who's going to, I think, because it's a fairly new project, and it's in the neighboring state. So even that person travels an hour and a half to come here. But throughout last summer, the person was bringing crops that had been grown, vegetables that had been grown. So there are the persons who take that brave step, such as our one devotee in the community, and actually attempt to perform such a service. But then it also needs support on the part of the community that is actually accustomed to going down the road, to think, oh, it would be more intelligent to support somebody in our community who's actually growing the foodstuff, who's actually bringing the milk. This is the person to support. So it works both ways. It requires an awareness and support being given to the persons who do take that brave step to try and make it a reality, because that's their natural inclination. They're practicing devotion to Lord Krishna, and they're performing the occupation that can actually bring this more balanced way of living. Because if one eats anything that is grown purely in that way, you know, a husband and wife, I was hearing, they plant something like 5,000 plants. So they're doing it manually. I mean, that is quite a different thing to, you know, factory farming, where you actually go out just some distance into the rural area here, and you see that every crop looks identical, and there's not a bird in sight, because it's all engineered food stuff. So no living creatures even coming near it, never mind that humans are going to consume it. I mean, that's destruction of any finer sentiments. I mean, how could it possibly be something? They actually, what's even been done is manipulation of genes, where it's like a pig gene being mixed with a plant gene. I mean, it's horrific. And yes, I have even read that this kind of genetic manipulation goes on even with cows. So I recall reading some article where there was an attempt to artificially create a calf, and the poor creatures had all kinds of illnesses, and yeah, so very horrific thing where there's that tampering with nature. So I do think our community is moving in the right direction, and we have the teachings, and when we recognize that a devotee in the community is actually taking that brave step, we need to support wholeheartedly. So that's some thought.
Hare Krishna Mataji, thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice points. One of the points you were mentioning was several times you mentioned performing sadhana bhakti. Even though one may experience the miseries of life, they're not as intense when you perform sadhana bhakti. And you quoted many verses regarding that. The first thing that came to mind when you said this, and also since this verse, Prabhupada quotes a verse from the Bhagavatam mentioning plavam, a ship, a boat. I'm probably pretty sure you've heard of the story of Noah's Ark in the Bible, where God told Noah, "My dear Noah, there's a flood coming. Mankind is so wicked. It's Kali Yuga, probably. And I'm going to destroy mankind. And in order for you and your family to survive, you have to perform sadhana bhakti." What is that? Build an ark. Build a ship. Otherwise, you will die. You and your family will die. So we see in all spiritual teaching, the Lord says the same thing to all of us. There's a flood of difficulties coming in your life. And unless you build character, then your spiritual enthusiasm won't remain alive. And that reminds me of one of my favorite quotes. It says, "Ships don't sink because of the water around them. Ships sink because of the water that gets in them." We can't stop everything on the outside: opposition, criticism, rumors, traffic. But if we allow what's on the outside to get on the inside, then we'll sink into depression, fear, anger, and vengeance. And this is why Krishna says in chapter 4, verse 36 of the Gita, if you are situated on the boat of transcendental knowledge, then you will be able to cross over the ocean of miseries. So my question is regarding the verse that Queen Kunti says, "Jama Aishraya Shutu Shribira Edamana Mandapuman Naivarhati Abhidatumbai Tuam Akinshana Gochana." She essentially says that when we have these material opulences, generally speaking, we're not inclined to build character because we're accustomed to be VIP. Everything goes away. There's a flood of difficulty coming in my life. Are you kidding me? I have everything going my way. So my question is regarding one particular opulence. It mentions a few opulences: beauty, wealth, education. But one opulence of Krishna that we may not consider an obstacle to bhakti is renunciation. That's one of Krishna's renunciation. The reason I'm mentioning this is because sometimes when we struggle in our controlling our senses, it may be actually a blessing, because One of my favorite, I'll just mention last point, one of my favorite verses in the Bhagavatam is in the 5th canto, chapter 1, verse 17. It says that even if a person is a monk who travels from forest to forest, he must always fear material bondage because he is married to 6 co-wives, the mind and 5 senses. On the other hand, even if a person is married, if he is divorced from Maya, then he's always self-satisfied. And we see this in pastime. Ambarish Maharaj, he was married, but because he was divorced from Maya, he was always self-satisfied. On the other hand, Dodo Rasamuni was a monk, but because he was married to Maya, married to his envy, married to his egoism, he was always dissatisfied. So my question is that when we, Krishna says, I'm the ability in a man, the any reason we could do anything, renunciation, Hrishikesha, the Lord is known as the master of the senses. So sometimes when we control our senses, we think I'm doing it, but Krishna is actually doing it. We see this in so many pastimes. So my question is that when Krishna mercifully gives us renunciation by his sweet will, he could take it away, you know, easily, like any other opulence, our money, etc. So when he gives us sweet will, the tendency is that what need is there to build character in a sense that you become very proud and arrogant. I'm pure and all these other people are, you know, they're not as sense controlled as I am, just like Durvasamuni. Because Durvasamuni had this understanding or this egotism that I'm the master of my senses and not Krishna, he was married to Maya, he was very envious, he criticized Ambarish. So my question is can we, understanding is that I personally, I think sometimes it's considered a blessing when we're struggling in our sadhana bhakti in one sense, and at the same time it's also a curse. So how can we see our struggles in Krishna consciousness as a blessing, and where we won't leave completely, but we see as a blessing? And how can we prevent ourselves from becoming arrogant and proud when Krishna does give us some blessing, like some opulence, like renunciation? So anyway, I hope that was clear.
Yeah, your question is, how does one not feel proud if one's even been renounced because that renunciation has been granted by Krishna? Well, the control of one's senses, it's only possible when one enters into the internal potency of Krishna through practicing sadhana bhakti. It's not possible to have that kind of sense control where there is internal renunciation happening if the sense control was not being done through sadhana bhakti. So for instance, one may imagine oneself as being sense controlled if one is controlling the airs in the body or controlling the through breath control, but in actual fact it requires the connection with Krishna, the relationship with Krishna, because he is the master of the senses, as you put, Hrishikesh, master of the senses. So the engagement of the senses in relation to him is essential for the senses to be controlled. He's the master, so he's allowing for the control of the senses. Otherwise, one is at the mercy of the senses. So that one witnesses that the senses appear to be under better control because one's able to actually be regulated and one's able to perform the correct activity at the correct time, that should lead to pride. Yeah, it could, if one's forgetting the salient fact that Krishna's allowing for that. It's through having engaged in the relationship with him and performed the activity for his pleasure that is allowing for that sense control, that sense to come under control. So one can't separate it out with the purpose with which one is doing the activity. It means one's forgetting the purpose for which one is performing the activity. So one needs to remind oneself the reason one's performing an activity, and also look at the mood with which one's performing that activity. I mean, naturally, if, you know, one's, you know, allowing pride to emerge, because that's something that is, I guess, comforting when one sees that one is doing well in something. It's, you know, boosts a sense of self. But that's like on the ego plane. So rather, one can actually, when one remembers that that sense has been coming under control because of the service being performed to Krishna, one can actually replace that with gratitude. Gratitude that one's able to actually perform that action because Krishna is making available that space for one to be in. So one can replace it with gratitude and also remind one's intelligence of the factual thing of why one is performing this particular action and how it is that that action is not due to one's own, you know, amazing ability. Yeah. I mean, one can pat oneself on the back, certainly, that one is willing to perform that action for Krishna. That's wonderful. One can pat oneself on the back for that, one's willingness. But the other part, it's the internal potency of Krishna, and one is grateful that one's been allowed to enter that space and receive that strength that doesn't put one at the mercy of one's senses any longer. So one is just so grateful. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.